Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
My dear fellow human beings, welcome to ET First Contact Radio. From now on, there is also a show every Sunday from 7 till 9 Central European Time, which is 10 until noon Pacific Time and 1 to 3 Eastern Time, and 6 to 8 GMT, Greenwich Mean Time. And in this show, I'm going to shed light on the majestic 12 documents. I have acquired some books to study and to go deeper into the UFO phenomena. And I will start right now by describing a memo from the Magic 12 documents that were by accident released by the government of the United States. And this is the description of craft. And in here the military personnel describes how craft are looking, and documented extraterrestrial craft or UFOPs are classified in one or four categories based on general shape as follows: A, elliptical or disc-shaped. This type of craft is of a metallic construction and dull aluminium in color. They have the appearance of two pie pans or shallow dishes pressed together and may have raised dome on the top or bottom. No seamed joints are visible on the surface, giving the impression of one-piece construction. Discs are estimated from 50 to 300 feet in a diameter and the thickness of is approximately 15% of the diameter, not including the dome, which is 30% of the disc diameter and extends another 4 to 6 feet above the main body of the disc. The dome may or may not include windows or ports, and ports are present around the lower rim of the disc in some instances. Most disc-shaped craft are equipped with lights on the top and bottom, and also around the rim. These lights are not visible when the craft is at rest or not functioning. There are generally no visible antenna or projections. Landing gear consists of three extendable legs endings in circular landing pads. When fully extended, this landing gear supports the main body 2 to 3 feet above the surface at the lowest point. A rectangular hatch is located along the equator or on the lower surface of the disc. That was type A of extraterrestrial craft, documented in the Majestic 12 documents, which I'm reading right now on ET First Contact Radio. Type B. Fuselage or cigar-shaped ships. Documented reports of this type of craft are extremely rare. Air Force radar reports indicate that they are approximately 2,000 feet long and 95 feet thick, and apparently they do not operate in the lower atmosphere. Very little information is available on the performance of these craft, but radar reports have indicated speeds in excess of 7,000 miles per hour. They do not appear to engage in violent and erratic maneuvers associated with the smaller types. And type C, ovoid or circular shape. This type of craft is described as being shaped like ice cream cone, being rounded at the large end and tapering into a near point and other end. They are approximately 30 to 40 feet long, and the thick end diameter is approximately 20% of the length. There is an extremely bright light at the pointed end, and this craft usually travels point down. They can appear to be any shape from round, cylindrical, depending upon the angle of observation. Often sightings of this type of craft are elliptical craft seen at an inclined angle or edge on. And then type D, airfoil or triangular shape. This craft is believed to be new technology due to the rarity and recency of the observations. Radar indications at isosceles triangle profile, the longest sight being 300 feet in length. Little is known about the performance of this craft due to the rarity of good sightings, but they are believed capable of high speeds and abrupt maneuvers, similar to exceeding the poor performance attributed to types A and C. This is a top secret magic ice only document, and reproduction in any form is forbidden by federal law. I mean, that used to be like this, so these documents were released, I believe, in 1977, because Dr. Lyer requested them with the Freedom of Information Act. Now, we'll have now a short musical break, and after the musical break, I will continue to read the description of extraterrestrial biological entities, or EBEs. And the book I have here in my hand is Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangers, from Linda Moulton Howe. And Linda Moulton Howe was present at the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club 2 weeks ago. And she did a wonderful and very good testimony. So now we have a short musical break, and after that I will continue with the EBE description, extraterrestrial biological entities. So stay tuned, stay here on this station, because we have wonderful things to cover. I'm going to play something from Peter Meisner, music that is uplifting, and it's called Dream of Tibet. Thank you. So, this radio show is dedicated to the Magic 12 documents for magic eyes only. But the listeners' ears are also magic. And my purpose is to make this information available for the public, because this used to be top secret information. Okay, I continue with the description of extraterrestrial biological entities. Examination of remains recovered from wreckage of UFOs indicates that extraterrestrial biological entities may be classified in two distinct categories as follows. A. EBE type E, type 1. These entities are humanoid and might be mistaken for human beings of the Oriental race if seen from a distance. They are bipedal, 5.5 feet, 4 inches in height, and weight 80 to 100 pounds. Proportionally, they are similar to humans, although the cranium is somewhat larger and more rounded. The skin is a pale, chalky yellow in color, thick and slightly pebbled in appearance. Their eyes are small, wide set, almond shaped, with brownish black irises with very large pupils. The whites of the eyes are not like that of humans, but have a pale gray cast. Their ears are small and not low on the skull. The nose is thin and long, and the mouth is wider than in humans and nearly lipless. There is no apparent facial hair and very little body hair. That being very fine, confined to the underarm and the groin area. The body is thin and without apparent body fat, but the muscles are well developed. The hands are small, with 4 leg digits, but no opposable thumb. The outside digit is joined in a manner as to be nearly opposable, and there is no webbing between the finger as in humans. The legs are slightly noticeably bowed, and the feet are somewhat splayed and proportionally large. Now we go to type 2, EBE type 2. These entities are humanoid but differ from type 1 in many respects. They are bipedal, 3 feet 5 inches, 4 feet 2 inches in height, and weight 25 to 50 pounds. Proportionally, their head is much larger than humans of type 1 EBEs, and cranium being much larger and elongated. The eyes are very large, slanted, and nearly wrap around the side of the skull. They are black with no white showing. There is no notable brow bridge, and the skull has a slight peak that runs over the crown. The nose consists of 2 small slits which sit high above the slit-like mouth. There are no external ears. It's a bit difficult to read this memo because it was printed with a type machine in the 1940s. The skin is a pale blush gray color, being somewhat darker on the back of the creature, and is very smooth and fine-celled. There is no hair or either the face on the body, and the creatures do not appear to be mammalian. The arms are long in proportion to the legs, and the hands have three long tapering fingers and a thumb, which is nearly as long as the fingers. The second finger is thicker than the others, but not as long as the index finger. The feet are small and narrow, and four toes are joined together with the membrane. It is not definitely known whether either type of creature originated, but it seems certain that they did not evolve on Earth. It is further evident, although not certain, that they may have originated in two different planets. Now, we'll have another musical break, and then we'll go to the description of extraterrestrial technology, and we'll talk a bit about crop circles and things that are found in the last 6 or 7 decades about ETs. There's a lot of interesting information to discuss here. So stay tuned, and we go to a song called Wet Places from Peter Meisner. You will like it very much. Hello and welcome back. It's good to have Dick with us, Indigo Star. I was describing indeed the Type B grays in my friend Dick, and I'm going to read another chapter about two gentlemen, Linda Moulton Howe Mead, in Washington D.C. And if you have questions, you can ask them on the chat. This chapter is really interesting. Another view from an alleged government insider, 1985. I met two men in 1985 who claimed to have government insider knowledge about an extraterrestrial civilization in the binary star system Zeta Reticuli, 37.5 light years from Earth. One man was retired in Washington, D.C., and the other continued government assignments in the Southwest. Both said they had worked for a secret group which continued from the Majestic 12 of the Truman administration. They also claimed some knowledge about other non-human types referred to simply as grays, or little guys, which they did not trust. Okay, yes, this is live, Dick. Other categories of alien life forms, which confused the situation even more, they said, were biological androids that ranged widely in appearance from insects to humanoids designed by their makers for various planetary tasks. Both have periodically given me information over the years, which I have no way to prove, but offer now in the context of the other military voices. To honor their request for anonymity, I combine their information into one voice I call Sherman. Sherman said it was true that the Majestic 12 was established by one of President Harry S. Truman's executive orders in 1947. The MJ-12 charter, he said, was to study the UFO phenomenon, to oversee retrievals of crashed disks and alien bodies, to back-engineer extraterrestrial technology, and to study captured beings referred to as extraterrestrial biological entities, or EBEN. The Magic 12, he said, was also directed to keep the public ignorant of the extraterrestrial presence at all costs, to prevent the public panic, and to keep the aliens' advanced technology hidden from the Cold War enemies in the interest of national security. In the 1990s, Sherman said MJ-12 had evolved to a different letter number code that began with E2. I asked Sherman if he had personally seen non-human technology. I've held an even communicator that's called the Yellow Book, I guess because the letters and words look like yellow light. The book doesn't have any pages. It's a rectangle about 15 inches by 19 inches, which is about 30 by 60 centimeters. If you saw it laying on the table, you would think it was a flat piece of plastic with a light gray metallic sheen. But when you pick it up in your hands, the words start appearing and they are a yellow color. You move your eyes along, the words appear and they just keep coming as you read. Once you get out to the bottom, the next page starts, followed by the next page and the next page, all over on the same surface. I don't know how it works. When you turn it over, there are 3D holographic photos or something that seem to pop upward in the air. You are supposed to be able to control the sequence by knowing how to move the book at different angles. I was told the Ebens know how to capture time and play it back in three-dimensional images. There are actual manuals about how to hold it and read and see the pictures. But I didn't have any instruction, so in the hour I held it, I learned only a few things. The yellow book had Earth history, including Christ, who the book said was put here by the Ebens to teach humans about love and non-violence, but humans killed him anyway. The yellow book even showed how things were built from foundations to pillars coming out of the ground to a finished building. How do the Ebens communicate in English or any other human language? I don't know. I don't know how the translation works. When I read the yellow book, it was in English. Maybe it picks up brainwave patterns or something and can interact in the language of any user. And it's in the act of picking the yellow book up that it's activated. Yes. And when you turned it into the back, you could see holographic-like projections of images come out into the air that related to where you were reading on the front side. No. When you turn it over, he said, you hold the square side of the book and hold it up in different angles. As you slightly move it, different pictures project out. Okay, so this is about the pictures, and it goes on like this, the communication. And then I skip a bit because this is interesting. How did the Magic 12 group get the yellow book? The Ebens, which is the race, gave it to us on April 25th, 1964, when they landed at White Sands for a pre-arranged meeting and stayed for a while. The day before, when Lonnie Zamora saw a craft and being near Socorro, was a coordination mistake of some kind. The Ebens landed 12 hours too early and too far west. We got it corrected somehow and they returned around 6 a.m. the next morning to the right place. By the way, Zamora drew those Eben symbols perfectly. And the symbols look like Greek. And Dick Indigo Star is asking on the chat where you get this information. And I just got a book second hand. It's called Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, by Linda Moulton Howe. And this information is hard to get, but I think you can find it secondhand, and you look on the internet. When you and your group have face-to-face communications with Ebens, how does it work? Well, the 1964 meeting was in Red Canyon, about 18 miles east of the Trinity site, first atomic bomb test in July 1945, at the north end of White Sands. We also had a decoy hangar set up at Holloman Air Force Base just in case there was a leak. They had a disinformation program to draw people's attention to Holloman when in actuality the landing was further north. After the Ebens landed in one of their egg-shaped ships, they had devices that looked like large wands. A wand was handed to our commander. When he spoke into the wand, the Eben language came out of another wand hand by one of the Ebens. When the Eben spoke into his wand, English words came out of the wand and the commander was holding sort of like a loudspeaker. Sherman, that sounds like the communicator rod depicted in the drawing that Adam Sandler and Robert Emerginer published based on actual photographs and film of an extraterrestrial meeting near Holloman Air Force Base. Do the events have a large back nose like a drawing? Absolutely not. The events are one of the types that crashed in 1947. They are about 4.5 feet to 5 feet tall, gray-skinned, 4 long, skinny fingers, flat face, very small nose, small openings for the ears, and a slit of a mouth. And the descriptions are, you can find the descriptions in the on the Magic 12 documents. If you Google Magic 12 documents, you can find it. And the word I was referring to was a wand, like a wand, a muur in Dutch. So the words would come on the wand and you could see what they were trying to say. And the wand was on the ship. So that's how they look like. And I think I'm going to get you some nice music again. And thank you, Dick, for the pronunciation. The pronunciation should be wand. Okay. That's what I meant. It's a kind of wall where the words would appear. So now we have a little piece of music called Water Blister from Peter Merziner from the album Wet Places from 2001. Welcome back, my friends. I just want to say that I have some information from Edgar Mitchell in another book written by a Dutch researcher from the University of Delft. UFOs, they exist. Koen Vermeer. In the Magic 12 documents, Mitchell explains clearly that one of more of a moment, researchers from the military and academic circles made a research by the American President Truman to do a research about UFOs. And this group was activated in 1947 to do research at the crash at Roswell. This is officially denied. Okay, the first signs of the existence of Magic 12 are in 1978 from declassified documents from Canada. Other documents in the 1980s were found, but they thought they were false. In 1984, in the United States, there were again documents found that strongly looked like the Canadian. However, the commission, according to the document in 1952, have clarified the existence from the former members of the CIA, Admiral Roscoe Hillenkoetter, the first director of the CIA, Dr. Vannevar Bush, researchers in the National Defense, James Forrestal, Minister of Defense, General Nathan Twining from the Air Force, General Hoyt Vandenberg from the Air Base in Vandenberg Airport, Dr. Detlef Bronk, physician in the field of air travel, and the list goes on. So the Magic 12 documents are really very interesting, and there are many books that you can find on several websites, I'm going to do more research in this field and read more books so that I can give you more accurate information about the retrieval of UFOs and crash sites and the documents that are related to them that are being released. But still, the majority of the documents is kept secret by the NSA and other instances. And what I want to do now is to give you some information that very little people know, but I think it's very interesting. It's a bit older book that I found, nevertheless very interesting. There's a list of institutions in the United States that are not known to the public. Now, for example, this is an abbreviation, the AFOSI, AFOSI, Air Force Office of Special Investigations. The AFOSI is a department of the American Air Force that conducts special research. Now, another one is the AMC, Air Material Command. The Air Material Command is located on Wright Field and was in 1947 clearly present at the UFO incident of Roswell. Now, there's another one, the ATIC, Air Technical Intelligence Corps. The ATIC on the Air Force Base Wright-Patterson was the center for the first UFO projects from the American government. Then there's another one. CBI, Colorado Bureau of Investigations. The CBI is a service that is dedicated to the research animals, mutilated animals, and Linda Moulton Howe has written several books about mutilated animals. The CIA, Central Intelligence Agency. The CIA is the most known American secret service that since 1953 was involved in the UFO research and is coordinating it. Then there's the CIC, Central Intelligence Corps. The CIC was the American military intelligence in the Second World War and until 1947 the predecessor from the CIA. Then there is the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency. The DIA is a sort of secret service in the American Ministry of Defense, and all activities are from the Air Force, the Army, and the Marine. Then there is, of course, the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigations. The FBI is the American Federal Police Force that in the 40s and 50s, on the lowest level, was also involved in UFO research. Since the end of the 70s, the FBI is doing research without success to the mutilated animals and is trying to find a connection to the UFO phenomenon. Well, there's not an abbreviation, the Freedom of Information Act, everybody is familiar with it. This law is to get information public. It was established in 1974 and it makes every American civilian possible to get documents from the government as long as it's not making the national security in danger or the private sector of a person of or economic secrets from the United States. Now, as I said, we are talking about the MG-12, the Majestic 12 documents. And it was a group of 12 people that after the Roswell incident with the UFO research started to do research about it, but they were never officially recognized. It is not another group, the MJ-12, or another name. MJ-12 documents that were not published from the official way are for some kind of reason falsified. Then there is NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command. The NORAD is the North American instance that's observing the airspace and space outside of the atmosphere. All flying objects that enter the Earth atmosphere are being registered and all flight traffic as well, also in the Russian airspace. The NORAD ground stations get their data from AWACS radar craft and from satellites from the Ministry of Defense. Since the end of the 80s, it is known that NORAD is intensively involved in the embargo of the truth embargo of the UFO files and information. Then there is NRO, National Reconnaissance Office. The existence of the NRO was only known on 18 September 1992 by an official of the American Minister of Defense. The NRO exists however, already since 1962. This service works with spy satellites and radar aircraft. It is almost certain that they are also involved in Project Aurora, and then there is the NSA, the National Security Agency. The NSA is a worldwide operating security service that is making use of spy satellites that they make it possible to tap telephone conversations and other forms of electronic communication worldwide. The service also has the control over UFO documents with a security clearance higher than top secret. The NSA refused to publish those documents and is helping with it to put the whole UFO phenomenon in the I have to translate from Dutch to keep the truth embargo alive. And then there is the last one, the OFI, Office of Federal Investigations. The OFI is conducting research in personnel that are involved in sensitive government projects, and the physician Robert Lazar stated that the OFI agents covered his tracks and tapped his phone. So that's very interesting, I guess, and I want to give you the pleasure by listening to some music again. Well, I have to rest also and have a little glass of water. So I'm going to look for some nice music, and I guess it will be Let There Be More Light. That's the album from Peter Meisner, and the song is called Lion's Dance. Here we go. That was Lion's Dance from Peter Magener, wonderful musician. And okay, I want to quote something from Rudolf Steiner, who was a philosopher and the founder of the anthroposophical community. In each lifetime, the human spirit appears as a repetition of itself with the fruits of its former experiences in previous lives. No two human beings have the same spiritual form. When the human spirit has passed through the world of souls on its way between two incarnations, it enters the land of spirits to remain there until it is ripe for a new body existence. Only by being embodied, incarnated, can man work in the world of bodies. He must take on the physical body and his tool so that through the body he can act on other bodies and they on him. What acts through this physical corporeality of man is the spirit. From this spirit flow the purposes. The direction it works is to take in the physical world. After its birth in the physical body, the soul, when met with some hard fate, has no glimmering of the fact that in the purely spiritual life before birth, the impulse led to this hard fate had been voluntarily accepted by it. What therefore seems completely unwished for from the point of view of the earth life is willed by the soul itself in the supersensible. And that's very interesting, of course. And what I want to say with this is that we incarnated on earth, and many of us as star seeds. So we have a human earthly body, but our spirit can be from other planets as well. And I think that's an interesting thought, because we are helping the earth with her ascension and humankind, because there are many people who have earthly souls. But we, of course, we all come from the same source. And to go back to the Magic 12 documents, there is some information that's really interesting. Just trying to find it. You know, the rules around the documents for the people that were had the eyes to read it are very strict. It's top secret, magic eyes only, which is, by the way, a book that you can order. It's called Magic Eyes Only. Forgot the author, but he was present at the citizens' hearing on disclosure. So that's very recent information about the Magic 12 group. Oh, here it is. Top secret Magic Eyes Only. Warning. This is a top secret Magic Eyes Only document containing compartmentalized information essential to the national security of the United States. Eyes Only access to the material herein is strictly limited to personnel possessing Magic 12 clearance level. Examination or use by unauthorized personnel is strictly forbidden and punishable by federal law. Removal of any pages from this document for examination by authorized personnel requires written authorization from the MJ12 Group Operations Officer. Reproduction in any form or the taking of written or transcribed notes is strictly forbidden. I think that's really cool. You know, that this leaked out by accident by the Canadian guy who was also at the citizens hearing on disclosure. I'm just going to look for his name because I think you should know. And he wrote also some interesting books, and that will be interesting to read. So just going to find it. And the witnesses, yes, okay. Let me see, he's from Canada, that's what I know. It's not Stanton Friedman, who is also a great researcher. And by the way, Stanton Friedman will be soon on my radio show. Oh yes, I know. Grant Cameron, that's his name. Grant Cameron, with a C. Grant Cameron was able to retrieve those documents. And by the way, the witnesses are very interesting people, and I try to communicate with them and to charter them to come on my radio show. And the book I was just reading about is from Linda Moulton Howe, who was also present at the citizens' hearing on disclosure in Washington, D.C. So, okay. Aliens and UFOs. Official manual, top secret, eyes only, extraterrestrial entities and technology, recovery. Yeah, that's a website called abovetopsecret.com, and there's information about the Magic 12 document. Thank you, Indigo Star, for finding this up. Great find. The link is on the chat. Okay. It's very difficult for the bunkers to criticize the Magic 12 documents because they can contain very clear language about what they found there. So it is official documents. And now I want to go a bit deeper into the UFO phenomenon with the information that was found in 1947, Roswell. Roswell is really the most famous UFO case, as you know. The fact that they said it was a balloon 3 days after, because they removed the material from the crash site and they did some great effort to put a balloon there, but of course the remains of the balloon are not, the weather balloon, are not the same as the flying saucer. And here's a memo from 1950. It's a bit difficult to read, but I do my best. Director urgent. Flying saucers. The office very confidentially advised by intelligent Richmond that they have been put in on immediate alert for any data whatsoever concerning flying saucers, CIC, state background of instructions not available from Air Force intelligence. We are not aware of reason for alert locally, but any information whatsoever must be telephoned by them immediately to Air Force intelligence. CIC advises data strictly confidential and should not be dismantled. That's the memo. There are many memos, and because of the Freedom of Information Act, they are now available for the public. So, I would like to continue with some music. So much, there's so many interesting songs to play on this radio station. Here is Rainforest. Thank you. So there's some other information I want to share with you about the concern from the extraterrestrials with the atomic bomb. So here we go. But Chairman, if extraterrestrial biological entities that you call Ebens are so concerned about atomic testing and have been manipulating DNA in already evolving primates of eons and actually made Homo sapiens, who inspired Einstein to come up with E equals MC squared, that could potentially destroy us and the Earth. I don't know, the man replied. He was a government official. But I've been told that there are time cycles. The events know what happened in the past, and they know what will happen in the future because they understand that time spirals go around and around, and that the same type of events happen at specific points in the spirals. And so they want to somehow change the catastrophe that awaits humankind. So they are now trying to influence us and convince us that we have to change because they know the future and we don't want that future. They don't want us to continue on this same destructive path. They don't directly interfere, but try to convince us to change things. But if they made us, put us here, and we have to live it, why are we still on destructive spiral? Because the first time around, the events didn't like it. They don't want the same catastrophe to happen again, like it happened in Atlantis, by the way. Maybe like an asteroid that slammed into the Yucatan and destroyed dinosaur life. This time, humans would be dominant Earth life that would be destroyed by a big asteroid hit. The events realize our society is much more complex than theirs because of all different races. It is easier to keep their civilization on track because it's just one race, but ours is so different. They figure they made a mistake and they are now trying to direct us in the right way of living, in preventing us from contaminating not just the Earth, but the whole universe. Now that's the point of view from the ETs. And they are disabling missiles, like information from Robert Salas. You can find the interview on YouTube, Robert Salas' interview on ET First Contact Radio, which is also a very interesting interview. So, with more than half an hour to go, I'm going to find something interesting to share with you in the book from Linda Moulton Howe. And please you with some other nice music from the album Launch Control from 2004, and it's called Electronic Billiard Cafe. Okay, so now I would like to continue by reading something from a person that was abducted, and this information was given by permission. In November to December 1994, a gentleman called Sparks had another revelation and wrote about it in his manuscript, Star People, Outsiders, Us or Them, from which this excerpt was used with his permission. Jim said he was pulled the hard way and then regained consciousness. So this story is about an abduction. I found myself with my feet dangling down from an examination table. I was almost paralyzed, but not completely. I had total range of mobility, but I could only move very slowly, and my peripheral vision was somewhat blocked. I was in a huge rectangular room or facility about half the size of a football field. The room was lighted well, and the table that I sat on was positioned about 30 to 40 feet from one of the walls. The surface of the interior wall seemed to be made up of metal. In fact, the room looked like the interior of a jet hangar. As I continued to slowly turn my body and head to look around, I saw military guards. They were lined up with their backs facing the wall about every 20 feet and wore sidearms. I heard the loud sound of jet engines screaming as if about to take off just outside the building or hangar I was in. I turned my head to look and saw a raised rectangular platform about 20 feet long and 10 feet wide. There seemed to be two or three tiers of steps around the entire perimeter of the platform. On the surface was what appeared to be two large barrel-shaped transparent containers, either made out of glass or maybe energy or some sort of magnetic or electronic field. They were about 5 feet in diameter and about 8 feet high. The top and bottom had large chrome-coated metallic rims or lids. It shocked me to see a man in one and a woman in the other. Then I saw two men in white lab coats and an alien. The three of them approached the male individual in one of the containers. My vision began to blur and I couldn't see clearly. I seemed to sense the containers were part of some sort of transport system. They didn't look like anything. I have seen inside craft and sensed they were man-made by us. But alien technology was being used. So he's speaking about back engineering. I was very confused. Why was the alien there? Was he involved with our military? Did they transport me from my house into one of those containers? Why was I here? Then the two men and the alien turned their attention to the woman in the other container. She looked frozen, like a zombie. As they started to handle her, one of the men held something in his hand that looked like a metal rod or wand. He was touching her with it. That made me mad, and somehow I got up and tried to pull the man away. The alien stepped back and screen imaged the two men to look like aliens. It didn't work. I was too angry to be scared. Then the vision of the two aliens turned back into humans again. Pardon me. One of the men mentioned the guards who were approaching to back off. The man holding the rod said out loud, "I'll handle this." I knew then he was human because aliens couldn't talk out loud. The man touched the back of my hand with the rod and it stung. He hurt me half a dozen times and things started to get fuzzy, and I somehow find myself sitting back on the examination table again. When I looked back over at the platform, the containers were empty and blacked out. When I opened my eyes again, I was laying down, being examined by something that kept checking back and forth from a human to an alien, and I felt drugged. The examiner told me out loud to sit up because he had instructions for me. He lectured me in a faltering fashion that I could clearly hear, but my mental state was such that I couldn't consciously retain it very well. I would hear, understand, and then forget. Then the man walked up to me as I sat there with my legs hanging over the table. He leaned over the top right side of my head and told me to read a book. He named the author and the title. He then said it would aid my understanding. The book was The Roman by Mika Maltari. Then the huge hangar door opened slowly. It was nighttime and we were in the middle of a desert, and it reminded me of the land around Las Vegas where I used to go sometimes on vacations. The acceleration pull began and I could see lights of a disc hovering outside the open hangar door, and my vision faded before it blacked out. Back home I found myself momentarily paralyzed in the living room sofa. On my hands were 9 red half-inch cuts, exactly where the man stung me with the rod or wand. It just didn't make sense to show me a place like that with most of the top secret unless we are on the brink of major change in this country and the planet. And who wanted me to see it? That's an amazing adoption story. You can find it in the book Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangeness, from Linda Moulton Howe. And as I told you, my friends and listeners were here, she was present at the citizens' hearing on disclosure. This story is really amazing. It sounds like Star Trek as Indigo Star says on the chat, and that's so true, my friend. And I guess that we have much more information to share in the coming weeks, because this show will be every Sunday between 10 a.m. and noon Pacific time, and that corresponds with 1 a.m. until 3 a.m. Eastern time, 6 to 8 p.m. GMT, English, UK time, and corresponds to 7 to 9 p.m. Central European time. And I'm going to please you with some other music again, and that's called City Lounge. Thank you. Okay, welcome back to ET First Contact Radio. The last 7 minutes of this show about the Magic 12 documents. And I found a list of another interesting abbreviations about secret military operations regarding UFOs. And one of them is GEODSS, Ground-Based Electro-Optical Deep Space Surveillance System, operated by the First Space Wing, Space Defense Operations Center, U.S. Space Command. The first GEODS location was on the White Sand Missile Range, New Mexico. Current GEOD locations are established worldwide. Deep space is defined as being at least 200,000 miles altitude above the Earth. GEODS reports directly to NORAD headquarters, Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Source: Encyclopedia of the U.S. Military by Arkin Handler. Now there's another one, Ice Cave. Purported location of alien detainees in New Mexico at Los Alamos National Laboratory. So, you know, those beings are being captured and detained. There's another one, IC, Integrated Command, an operational group composed of members of the different armed services formed to work on a specific joint objective, to engage in joint research and development activity. Examples of integrated commands are the U.S. Space Command, Space Defense Operations Center, the National Security Agency, and the National Reconnaissance Office. Very interesting. Now then there is the JRDB, Joint Research and Development Board of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Coordinator of Scientific Efforts for the Military Establishment, the AIC, Primitive Industry and Academic Institutions, combined OSRD and JN Webb to form JRDB in 1946 under chairmanship of Dr. Vannevar Bush, and he is one of the members of the Majestic 12 group. And to go back to the Majestic 12, the group members are here in the list. Special Studies Group established by Special Classified Executive Order number 092447 on September 24, 1947, by U.S. President Harry S. Truman to investigate the UFO phenomenon. Members of the first Majestic 12 list are 1. Admiral Roscoe H. Hillenkoetter, 2. Dr. Vannevar Bush, 3. Secretary James V. Forrestal, 4. General Nathan F. Twining, 5. General Hyatt S. Vandenberg, 6. Dr. Detlef Bronk, 7. Dr. Jerome Hunsaker, 8. Mr. Sidney W. Source, 9. Mr. Gordon Gray, 10. Dr. Donald Menzel, 11. General Robert M. Montague, and 12. Dr. Lloyd V. Bergener. Now there's another interesting thing here. It's called Major. It's a pro word associated with Space Defense Operations Center, U.S. Space Command, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Now there are more organizations in the list, and one of them is the NRO, National Reconnaissance Organization, jointly operated by NSA, CIA, Air Force Systems Command under the NSC to design, construct, operate and maintain high-altitude aircraft, satellites and other national technical means to conduct strategic surveillance and espionage. NRO and NSA operate ground and space-based sensors to track and catalog space-borne objects in association with Space Event Operations Center. NRO is believed to be directly involved with monitoring flying disc phenomena, like UFOs. Now then there is RAND, Research and Development Division, Douglas Aircraft Company, involved in the RAND Corporation in November 1948, a private non-profit research and development organization. RAND enjoys the special relationship with U.S. Air Force Systems Command at the Aerospace Corporation. In July 1948, RAND developed another special relationship with the Atomic Energy Commission in RAND's Physics Department, which was separated from the RAND divisions and required a AICQ clearance for access. Later, RAND developed other special relationships with the Ford Foundation, Carnegie Institution of Washington, D.C., and the Rockefeller Institute. RAND's only clients in the first two decades of existence was the U.S. Air Force and the Atomic Energy Commission. Okay, so now we have come to the end of the show, and I want to tell you all the information you can find back at Glimpses of Other Realities, Volume 2, High Strangers, and the author is Linda Moulton Howe, and she was, as I said, present at the National Press Club for the Citizens Hearing on Disclosure. Tomorrow at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, there will be ET First Contact Radio on the same station. And on Thursday, I will be on BBS Radio with Costa Macreas, and he is one of the active members of the CIA, not CIA, CE5 initiative, and that's on BBS Radio at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, and that's on Thursday again. So thank you for listening, and love and light to everybody, and have a wonderful day, and we will talk soon. Bye-bye.